everybody, it's the Lovecraft Show. My name's Mr. X-Stitch.
And I'm Marion. Welcome to Season 3.
Saison 3.
Indeed.
That was a dreadful French accent.
Saison 3.
Saison 3 de la Show de la Mort de la Craft. even that sounds dreadful.
Apologies to all French-speaking people across the nation.
We're back. It's our third season.
We are so excited because we have got the biggest lineup of some truly intergalactic stars to talk to about the world of craft, among other things.
You said too much already.
Oh, you know, I always used to like it when we used to say love, crafts, and everything in between.
Yeah. And literally, I think that's what we've done this time, haven't we?
I think we have.
We're opening the show with a big one. You know us. We like a winner. Have we got a winner this time?
We have. And none other than a colossal, incredibly talented winner of the Great British Bake Off.
In 2013, a young lady by the name of Frances Quinn stepped into the gilded tents of the Great British Bake Off and blew people's minds away with her biscuit-based shenanigans.
And it's not just biscuits on the base these days, it's biscuits on the top. I said when we recorded this with Frances, I said, I think she was the first baker to actually put a biscuit into a cake. And I'm going to stand by that.
Yeah. And she seemed to fairly agree that. It was a great interview because of her sheer obsession with the biscuit and with the principles of design and baking. I felt very inspired after talking to her. And now, dear listeners, it's your turn to feel inspired as we take a moment or two with the mighty Frances Quinn. The bakery down the street from me is looking for help. Apparently, they have several rolls that need filling.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Lovecraft Show and welcome to our supersonic special guest today. It's the fabulous Frances Quinn,
hello.
Winner of Bake Off,
welcome.
Queen of Biscuits.
Is it a Swiss bakery, Jamie?
Let's say that. I like to start with a conversation starter like that where there's an awkward pause because I feel like it can only get better.
Well, I was all ears. I was like, where is this? Tell me its name. what is their daily special? Do they do cinnamon buns? And then I was like, it's just fictional. Never mind.
It's just a dad joke.
It's a dad joke. Jamie's good at dad jokes. We are absolutely enthralled with your baking, Frances. Jamie and I, over the last few weeks when we've been doing our research, have been sort of dreaming through your book and looking at all the recipes and looking on your Instagram and thinking, how does she does this? How does she do that? And I said to him, I think, and I'm just going to say this for the record, that you're the first person to put biscuits into cakes. Now, you know, correct me public if I'm wrong, but I never saw that until you started putting bourbons into brownies.
I would love that if that was my claim to fame, because biscuits, I could just wax lyrical about them. The bourbon brownies, the recipe in my book, that has been, it's up there with the most popular, together with the malted milk and cookie tiffin. You see, biscuit related. It's just like, why have to choose whether you want a cake or a biscuit? Put them both together.
Well, it's nothing short of genius, frankly, let's be honest. But I mean, I remember seeing that, the first time seeing that, and just thinking, oh my God, it was just so clever, because then you could just cut the brownies in the shapes of the biscuits.
Yeah, you've got individual slabs.
Yeah, and now you see it all the time, and you think, every time I see it, I think to myself, Frances Quinn did that first.
I got hardly any dough or biscuit crumbs. So that, you see, I'm up there, Jamie, with your bad puns. Not, they're not bad, actually. They're very good puns. Very good ones. I'm actually going to be doing a bourbon biscuit ice cream sandwich. So again, along the same lines as the brownie, but it will be ice cream sandwich. So yeah.
Do these ideas just pop in there? Do they just come to you, this sort of creativity?
That is the bit I love best, because that's what everyone always, where do they come from? And I'm like, I sometimes think I want to be a culinary creative conductor. And my problem is that I have too many ideas and not enough time and not enough hands and bakery people. Like, I'd love to go, Jamie, make up 5 meters of phyllo, and Marion, can you whip up 2 litres of ganache, and then we could put all these creations together a lot quicker. Paul Smith is one of my great heroes, and I love his sort of quote that inspiration is everywhere. And I think because my background's more in design, I sort of look at things that aren't edible, and texturally, because I did textile design, think of a food texture that would resemble that. So simply down to, say, chocolate brownie crumbs that in my eyes look like soil, and biscuit crumbs that look like sand. That's when I did like the sort of sand castle inside out cheesecake. So for me, it's not a big leap. It's like if you just look at something, it almost talks to me.
I know, but you know, when I was watching Baking Playlist, which we're going to talk about quite a lot later on, when you made little pineapple flowers with drying out pineapple rings over the top, I mean, that was just legend. So I love your creativity, and I love the way you are inspired by all these real things. So that's why the book is so gorgeous. Aww. Because it's just full of these fantastic ideas using edible things.
Edible things. And sometimes, like with the pineapple flowers, like I have got so much respect for people who can do sugar craft and all of that, making things out of fondant, but I tend to prefer to use more natural ingredients. And it's that thing, like you said, with the pineapple flowers, I had some daffodils, and when they were drying out, they were just looking a bit like dried mango. So I used mango for that. So it's sometimes just that real crossover between craft and food. And I love the fact that almost you could have a baker and a potter, because it's like the dough and the clay in my mind are quite similar. And then the washes you give them, and the fact that dough and clay both go into high temperatures, like a kiln or a baking oven. And like looking at a chocolate designer and a jewellery designer, and the sort of craftsmanship and like dark mahogany beads compared with like dark marble chocolate. So yeah, I can't separate the two. When people say, would you rather design or bake? I'm like, they just naturally thread together.
I love that. So tell me though, when you were little, were you sort of, did you used to make loads of things out of plasticine and stuff? Did you have these thoughts then?
I think, because I'm the youngest of five, so I always say the kitchen was a bit of like an extension of the living room. But I wasn't doing anything fancy. I was just making flapjacks. But I had that, my older sister, I could go in on a Sunday afternoon and just pull out a bag of oats and make flapjacks. But I always remember Sylvanian families were my favourite thing. My other brother was Playmobil. And do you remember Fimo? Although it's known as Fimo, but yeah, we always said Fimo. And so I remember my middle brother was really good at like making Fimo. So he would make me little Bakewell tarts and croissants to go in the Sylvanian family bakery. Although you had some, he would make more. And do you remember good old days of Woolworths, how you got the foam bananas? So they would sometimes come in as quite a neon sort of inflated baguette. And just like melting down crisp packets into those little brooches.
Oh, I did that. Yeah, rinky dinks.
And I can't throw anything, you know, like the inside of envelopes when they've got a design on, or like, I just see inspiration in every sort of like little bit of paper or bit of fabric and like embroidery threads and just, yeah, like even cupcake cases. I love sometimes the colour palette you have for them and how you can create things out of that. So yeah, it started very early, and my dad had a bookshop. So I always wanted to be a children's book illustrator when I was growing up, because I loved like Quentin Blake and the Albergs, and like, do you remember the Jolly Postman and all the things that came out there? So it has been that sort of marriage of design and drawing. And then, like I say, in my kitchen, I have things from scalpel knives to sort of rulers to knitting needles, because they make a really good thing if you're making biscuit sort of gift tags, or to make lines. Like, you can obviously use the sort of traditional baking gear, but sometimes I say, honestly, just look around, like even, you know, just things like I'm just holding up a knitting needle, or using buttons to press into biscuit dough. Yeah, it's just, I don't think you should limit it. Like, I create in the kitchen, but my ideas are coming from outside of the kitchen.
I think there's a sort of synesthesia that goes on. I was thinking about this before, about sometimes you've said you see things and your brain automatically sees them in terms of food. And, you know, synesthesia, where sometimes people see colours, but they hear music or whatever, you know, it's almost like you've got a food version of that. But at the same time, there's a great freedom in just going, I'll use whatever tools come to hand,
and let the kitchen... Yeah, sometimes, because I'm also such a hoarder, and you know when you've got, I'm such a hunter-gatherer, and you've got too many things around you that almost it's then a bit overwhelming. And sometimes it is quite nice to go, I'm limiting myself to maybe just this thing of biscuit dough, and just like, you don't even need a cutter. Like I sometimes say, you know, cocktail sticks, the little container that's sort of like a honeycomb shape, that you can just use that to cut out biscuits. And I remember one of the most popular cakes on my blog, and the most unappetizing, was when I did a giant cigarette cake for one of my ex-bosses at Jules, because we known her as sort of Fag Ash Lil. And so, and I remember like printing out, I just like Googled pavement. So like printed out an A4 or A3, I think it was, thing of pavement, put that on a board. So that was the backdrop. So then already when you put the cake on there, it looked almost quite authentic. And then I remember I did a Swiss roll. And again, I remember when I was doing it, and this is when like happy accidents, like, you know, when you take the greaseproof paper away, some of the cake was being removed. And I was like, oh no, but actually that added to the element of like a sort of like the end of a cigarette, and then getting sort of like cocoa powder, mixing in with desiccated coconut to look like the ash. So I remember when I took it to her, everyone was like, oh my God. But then there was a bit of like, I don't know if I want to eat that, because it looks so sort of like, would you want to eat a cigarette? And even when I did like the hidden bulb cake, and that was just around springtime, seeing like spring bulbs. And in my eyes, it looked like phyllo pastry because of the sort of fragility and papery look of it. And so that's how that idea came about. So for me, I do feel the ideas are given to me, and it's the bit I love best. I absolutely love coming up with the ideas. But like I said, they just naturally evolve.
I think it's fantastic. So many things you could recreate. But I love also the fact that, you know, when I've sort of, as I followed you, so you've gone almost from like cake to this tiffin kind of phase at the moment, where you're doing all this sort of big rocky road in
tiffin
the
period,
molds.
Like Picasso's.
Through your tiffin period, yeah.
It is true. And it's this thing, I think, someone sees something and then they want it. And then I do have to be like, okay, I don't mind making them. Each one is a bit different. But then it is about doing something that maybe hasn't been done before. I say that with wedding cakes, like even the wedding cake I did on Bake Off, how everyone said it was quite unusual because of all the edible confetti and the dried fruit. And, you know, it saved me because it was quite a natural, rustic looking cake. And then it was the final sort of 5 minutes when you could really elevate it. But I've done wedding cakes with people that have been like a stack of brownie towers, like you said, a whole mishmash of tiffin and colours. And it wouldn't necessarily be what someone would traditionally think should be a wedding cake. But then other people there are like, oh, I want that. So it's sort of like encouraging that diversity. And speaking to the bride and groom or whoever's birthday it is, or like my boss, and going, okay, I'm going to create something bespoke to something that we associate with you or that you like. And it maybe isn't your traditional Colin the Caterpillar, although I love a Colin the Caterpillar. So it's sort of working to something that's already done. And like when I did the cupcake brownies or the Oreo brownie owls, I was like, a brownie doesn't have to just be put in a square tin. It could be put in like almost a cupcake. Cake shies, because then you have like both the chewy middle and the more crispy edge, which you're going to lose out on if you just have the square tin and then someone just gets the middle bit with no edges. And yeah, it's thinking outside of the box or the biscuit tin or cake tray, so to speak.
But the curious thing though is you haven't gone down the route, like for instance, I've got a three-year-old daughter, and one of her favorite people on Instagram, the rare occasion we do it, is someone called Side Surf Cake. So she does photorealistic cakes, and she's like, is it a tin of sardines? No, it's a cake. Is it a picture of Mr. Beast? No, it's a cake, and all that. And you know, when you're talking about your cigarettes, you're heading in that direction, but you've not done that. I still think you keep yours quite grounded because people can still see behind the magic, if you know what I mean. It's not like it's total illusion.
I mean, like I said, I completely take my hat off when I watch some of those programs, and they're, but I'm not a massive fan of too much fondant. Like, although like my criticism on Bake Off was style over substance, I do like the flavours and the cake to be not just full on sugar. And like one of the cakes I did that again is quite, you look at it and you're like, well, oh my gosh, is my beans on toast cake. And that's just like, I made the beans by like salted peanuts in like a sort of caramel sauce, which I added to tiny look. That's when I did use a little bit of like dye, a tiny bit of like orange dye. But the peanuts look like beans. And if you put them in actually an empty tin of Heinz, it is quite, your brain is so confused. And then you can even do cheesy beans by like grating marzipan cheese, which again, in my eyes, looks like cheddar. And it was done like my cousin, it was like one of my best birthday presents. She got me, they don't actually make them anymore, but it was called the Cake Witch. And it was, I used it for the first signature bake on Bake Off because we were asked to create our signature sandwich cake. And again, this is an instance where in my head, I just saw sandwich. Yeah. And I remember asking, like, going, is anyone else doing this? And they're like, everyone says, no one else is making a cake that looks like a sandwich. So it was just a Victoria sponge with raspberry jam. But I've gone on now to toasting cake, which is a complete revelation. So, you know, if you've got a bit of cake that's maybe gone past its best bit, particularly a loaf cake, if you just put that in a toaster under the grill, it's like a toasted tea cake. So it gets that lovely toasty top. Oh. And then you don't even have to put buttercream on, just a bit of butter, and then spread it on with your salted caramel baked beans. And it's great.
I love it. I love it. I always feel with the ones where people make those sort of super real cakes, though, it's just a case of like, if you're really good at painting. That's my feeling, I mean, with
yeah.
those.
And yeah.
So it's not, I don't think it's the same set of skills, you know, because I think if you're making things out of edible things, it's not just being a good painter. This is like actually recreating the senses and the textures and the look and the, so I'm with you. That's what I like.
And I think for me as well, it's really, it's not, I think that was the thing when I was doing the book, how I wish there was more pictures. And that's why sometimes it's good to have do demos or people to see me make it, because I don't want them to be intimidated. And I even say, like with the biscuit sandcastle, actually, if the biscuits come out of the mold and they've sort of like, they haven't fully come out perfectly, that actually adds to it looking more realistic. Because when you've got like sandcastles on a beach, they're not all completely pristine, you know, a ball gets chucked on them or... So, and like with the chocolate sort of soil cakes, it's natural for nature to not be completely perfect. Whereas say when you're doing like fondant flowers, or there is more of a pressure to sort of make sure it can't go wrong, where I'm like almost lean in to the mistakes.
It's probably quite a healthy attitude anyway, right? Because if you're going to break your back over perfection or whatever, you're...
I mean, don't get me wrong, I am a perfectionist, but I really am trying to embrace the imperfectly perfect things more.
How happy are you about making the same thing twice? Or do you get people that ask you to make this a thing you've done before, and are you a bit like, no, I want to be at the frontier?
No, I think, like, say when you were saying about my tiffin stage at the moment, again, there's going to be one they see it, but I say, okay, have you got favorite sweets or biscuits? So they will be slightly different because their selection of biscuits, or maybe they like a Malteser rather than say a Minstrel. And sometimes it is that thing, once you've done it once, you sort of know what you're doing and you can just get into the swing of it. And with the wedding cake, certainly, you know, I try and have a really good relationship with the florist, because the flowers often as well, like the colour palette, that will change it to a degree. So even, it's like people say about a cake recipe, like a Victoria sponge, it's pretty much that, you know, they say baking is a science. It's pretty much the same method.
Yeah.
Again, it's that thing, what you do with it. But no, I don't, I just get too many ideas. And that's what I mean about, you do one and then you get an idea for another while you're doing it. But you're like, I've got to finish this one first. But then I almost want to go on and create the next one in the collection.
So talking of wedding cakes, now you recently have become engaged to your lovely tall Welshman, which is very exciting.
Congratulations.
Super congratulations. But what's going to happen about your wedding cake?
I don't think I'm going to make one. I mean, I might make something sort of that's going to be used for the dessert part, but we quite like the idea. One of my friends once had it where she had a like an old school ice cream van, so you had like 99 Mr. Whippies, so almost embracing that. But then it might be that my cousin, who's a really incredible chef, does the food, and he does the most amazing sticky toffee pudding. So it's like the idea of having maybe a tower of sticky toffee pudding that you could then go over to the ice cream van and get like soft serve.
Oh.
Or the Welsh bit, we could have like Welsh cakes that again you sandwich together with ice cream, or scones. So it could be like,
instead of,
you could have clotted cream ice cream with your scone. So it's that playful approach.
How much of a window is there for us to be able to get to go to this event. It's sounding good. I will be your friend hard.
No, exactly. We're hoping to have like the evening bit when it's like, we just want it to be about good food and good music, and it to be a real celebration of like just, you know, our own quirkiness.
Hey, everybody, if you like The Lovecraft Show, take a moment and subscribe to us on your favourite podcasting app.
Join us on The Lovecraft Show on Spotify,
Apple Podcasts,
Google Podcasts,
and your favourite podcast app.
Can't wait for you to join us for more Lovecraft's fun and chat.
This has been 9 years since you won Bake Off.
Yeah, I know.
Like, what's your perspective on it now? Like, do you still talk to people from that series? How do you feel about it now? Because there's a lot of distance there. So
it's like a massive sort of Bake Off family that just keeps on ever extending, the siblings, and it keep getting bigger. I mean, we were the last year on BBC Two. We were like vintage Bake Off. I think they were saying it was the year, it was starting to get big, like the year John won. And then my year, I think because there was so much controversy around our final, the all-female final, it just sort of blew up. And I think they were saying that our final had more viewing figures than Top Gear, which was obviously BBC Two's normally most viewed show. So it was Kate versus Cars, hence why it then moved over to BBC One. And then obviously I'm so loyal to like Mel and Sue. Like, you know, I think Noel and Matt are great and Sandy, but yeah, there's something about BBC Two. And I remember watching it the year after, even the year I was on it, very sort of stressful, whereas now it's a little less sort of heart murmuring watching it. And the thing is, my little niece, Nalini, she's 4 and she's got my book and she knows that Auntie Fran, she always rings me, we're going to do a cake, Auntie Fran, what should we do? But the weird thing is going to be watching my series of Bake Off with her, because she's got no idea yet that her auntie is part of Bake Off. I don't think she's really, probably in the next few years when she maybe starts watching herself. So that's going to be quite a significant thing. And even the secret squirrel cake I did for the first episode of Bake Off, that was all inspired by one of my work colleagues at Jules called Susie, because she was pregnant at the time and she was calling the baby the secret squirrel. And that secret squirrel is now Hugo, who's 9. So he's almost grown up with me from it all. So it's just when you see him now, you're like, oh my gosh, that, he was like a little secret squirrel when I was like going on the show. So yeah, it's a funny thing, time. It seems like 9 years, but also it can seem like yesterday as well.
And you've still managed to like find your groove subsequently, because I feel like, so for instance, I was on telly once on a show called Kirsty's Handmade Britain, and I took part in a needlework competition.
Yeah.
And I did really badly, but if Kirsty won it, fairly and squarely judged, everyone thought I was robbed, seemed to reflect in my favour. But you know, after that, man does cross-stitch novelty and all that, people are like, oh yeah, we've got lots of great ideas, and you can really get quite carried away with what the future media storm can happen. And then, like, for me, obviously didn't, look at me now, but I wonder, like,
look at you now with your embroidery threads behind you that I won. Yes, don't you put yourself down, Jamie,
standing in a puddle. But it's I wonder, I guess you get that, don't you? You won Bake Off, so there must have been myriad of opportunities, but then how have you've negotiated yourself into this position that seems like a really great fit, like you've found your groove nicely?
I mean, I sort of, it's funny when I look back now on it, because honestly, going on the show, I don't think I properly thought, A, it suddenly got big, but I was just going on to be creative, and I didn't really realise what a sort of like roller coaster it was going to be. And I look at now, like the winners, how I think because Instagram has blown up and just the sort of coverage of it, that maybe if I'd had more of a strategy about what I wanted to do, but I was always very sure, you know, I was offered things to do, but they just didn't sit right. And I think I've always wanted to keep my roots in the design side of things and marrying these things together. But the nature of the show is that each year there is going to be a new winner. So the media, you know, is obviously going to gravitate towards that winner. So you do sometimes feel like a bit of an expiry date, like Bake Off winner 2013. And there's obviously going to be a Bake Off winner this year, 2022. And naturally, the food magazines, all of the media buzz is going to be around them. So it's very much, I sometimes have to, for me, like before I went on Bake Off, I was just building this baking portfolio at Jules, because they were the ones that really, I think, fired in me the creative side of baking. And it's sometimes like returning back to that before there are any spotlights on you, but just doing it just to share that ideas and almost inspire other people. And that's what I remember thinking when I did win. God, it's not just the colleagues at Jules or people on the blog looking at it. It's got such a bigger platform, but it is just it's a saturated market out there. That's why sometimes it's trying not to compare yourself too much, because, you know, the killer of joy, and trying to stay in my lane and go, what do I find inspires me and what's special to me? And that's why I really try and make sure I still bring in the illustrative side. I still like the music bit, and not just do then what everyone else is doing. It's a funny landscape. It's sort of a love and hate relationship you have. And yeah, I don't think I properly, like I said, thought it through. I quite like being anonymous. And then suddenly I was just being known as Bake Off, Secret Squirrel Woman. And it's like, oh my God, I didn't think this through.
People are trying to give you handshakes all the time. Is that a thing?
Well, I know. I didn't realise as well. It was only when they did the review of like Bake Off over the last 9 years. Apparently I was the one that christened the Hollywood handshake.
Oh,
I know. I tell you what, I've got no royalties for it, I can tell you that. Apparently it was, so I was the second one in Bake Off to get one. And apparently when they do that little, you know, they're talking to you off camera, I said, I got a Hollywood handshake. And then it's sort of just become a bit of a tagline.
And it's all you first. I love that.
And when did the book come out? I have it here.
So
it's
the
very
book,
good.
There you go. And do you take the belly band off, Jamie? Because that's something I try and encourage people to do.
I mean, I'm a big Spencil fan to the point where I go around talking about Poons and Spencils now. I think you've broken me slightly.
I know. I really want to speak to Barn the Spoon, because I would love to get an actual Spencil made. But that was another case with, say, the media thing. They were like, it will sell better if your face is on it. And I was like, I just don't want to go down that sort of celebrity book approach. So we sort of made a compromise. So there's a picture of me on that belly band, but I actually prefer it, Jamie, if you turn the belly band round. So it is meant to be practical, because normally you just throw those things away. It's got a ruler on. So if you know you're in the kitchen, it's got all like the equivalents of what you'd need for, you know, weight of bananas. And I actually prefer it if you put that belly band round the other way. I think that. I think that blue and sort of like tomatoey red.
They work very well together, don't they? But that belly band, so that, did you do the design on the belly band with all that drawing?
Yes.
This is the other thing I love, is when you do your kind of infographic things, sort of like mood board infographic type of thing. I love that. I mean, it's just the artist in you, you know, presenting information in such a captivating way.
Well, like, I just think visually, like, that was why in the book each chapter has like the visual pie chart. So you can see, you know, like flour to sugar and everything else like that. But I often felt on the show that they were coming up to me near the end, the producers, and were like, Fran, you know, when you come to tell Mary and Paul what you're going to make, just try and keep it a bit short, because I was going, and it's inspired by Edith Piaf because of her, and like we've got like Le Vion Rose, and I'd need a pencil and paper so I could visually sketch it. And I remember when I did the cauliflower cheese scones, Paul was like, oh, I see what you mean now, because I've got such a strong visual in my head, but for other people, I'm just spouting weird words around. So you need those sort of visual depictions. That's why I try and do the illustrated recipes as well, because it just breaks it down a little bit.
Do you think, will there be another book?
Do you know what? I've almost finished writing one on biscuits. And again, trying to bring more illustration into it also. And I'd love to do children's books as well. And, you know, even some of the, you know, the Secret Squirrel, again, making it sort of almost like a baking. There'd be one recipe at the end, but you would have all the different characters. Yeah, I could... I've got many ones about a dyslexic owl called Wol, who actually likes his sleep, and it's almost like a group of owls is called a parliament of owls. So you would have a bird house of commons, and you'd have bird house of common facts, and knowing how the ingredients go in, and it's almost.
Please do it. All
publishers.
Yeah, I can
see the kids' book, because there's so much playfulness in that book of yours already. it feels like it's quite a natural fit. I suppose it's just a trade-off with the sort of technicality of some of the things.
Yeah.
For young people.
I think because I was a baby toddler designer at Jules. So I think, again, that plays in that sort of childlike playfulness, I guess. Yeah, that both it appeals to adults and children.
But I think that's the beauty of creativity, isn't it? True creativity, where you can let go. You don't need the rules. You don't need the straight lines and the big walls, although sometimes you like them. But, you know, I love that because I'm a bit like that. I don't particularly want to be hemmed into anything.
And I even find how I give myself rules. I'm like, well, Fran, if you're not liking this and you don't want that colour, don't use that colour. You know, it's weird how you almost put blocks up in your own head to what you need to do. And my brother's an architect. And again, like looking at his plans, because I'm like, you know, you really can't afford to go wrong there. And I'm like, oh, could you like make that a bit different color or move that around? He's like, man, this is people's lives. Can't just change that.
This ain't a bourbon biscuit.
This isn't a bourbon biscuit, exactly. So, but yeah, I do just think creativity is everywhere. And even people that say, oh, I can't draw or I can't. Like, I really try to encourage my dad to draw more because I just love there's a freedom in him. It's not perfect, but I think there's more character in that work, I think.
I think this for me, there's more value, maybe because that's what I would tap into. But
yeah.
For me, but perfection is never as attractive as freedom.
And I think, like, even I think that when I was doing the book, and I think it was Ian Brody from The Lightning Seas, just talking about creativity and perfectionism and how it's almost coming to terms with the fact that nothing's ever fully finished. You always think, oh, I could make that better, or I could do this, or I could do that. And it's almost like hand that over and it's another piece. It's like a continuous chain rather than, this is the perfect thing I finished, because I think as a creative you never think it's finished.
Absolutely.
And it's almost coming to terms with that rather than fighting it.
For me, the difficulty as a creative person is if somebody tries to turn that off or turn the dial down, and that can make me extremely miserable if I feel that I'm limited and I can't, you know, that's the only time I really, really struggle, if I've got to be within some very straight lines.
Yeah.
So I mean, have you ever gone through periods of time where you haven't been able to be as creative as you want to be? Because I think
Bake Off.
I was going to say Bake Off. It was you were wildly creative within a very tight structure there.
I sometimes it was the best and the worst time of my life. Just as that, in like before going on the show, baking was very much a creative playroom, downtime, radio on, podcast. This was probably pre-podcaster, wasn't it? Whereas then I remember walking into the tent that first time going, oh my God. Like, this is stress central, like tension levels, time limits. You need to get this done. And as well, being a perfectionist, like things, they went wrong. And you had to then, like when a certain biscuit tower collapsed, whatever else, you had to then still present that. And then know that A, Mary and Paul were looking at that going, oh my God, can I just do it again? Can I do this better? And then the rest of the nations could be looking at it. You haven't got that time to almost refine or practice it. And like, obviously I've just been speaking about that doesn't matter, but when you're being judged on it, it's that time is the enemy. Time and fridge space, I often say on that show, was the enemy.
Fridge space
and weather conditions. But I think it's that thing of when you have a picture in your head, the reality never marries up with that. And it's almost leaning in again to the fact of like, I'm just going to try and maybe embrace something different. And I remember even when I did the cookbook, that was a case with those bourbon biscuit brownies. Actually, I'd done a mood board for every bake. Like, I worked with a really lovely stylist, Tabitha, and we were making all the chapters have a color palette and tie in, which you sort of see. And the bourbon brick brownies, I'd intended them to be built up like a wall, which I sort of show people you can. And I'd gone to the toilet once I'd like baked them. And then I came back and they'd taken them out of the tin. And they just all loved the look of it, still in the tin, before being cut. And actually, it is a great shot. But because my head had gone, no, we're going to have a wall, it was quite a sort of frictionless fight of like, and I couldn't have two photos. And it's one of those ones of like, although that's what you thought the finished thing was going to look like, actually, this has worked maybe better. And it's just that I draw a picture so quickly in my head that when you come to do it, it takes a bit longer and things inevitably change. So, and I always say to people as well, like my friend always said, that your standards, your 50% is someone else's 100%. Like it's not, it's trying to just be like, okay, that's not worked out how it should, but I'm the one with the script. No one else really knows that. It's like, oh yes, it was meant to actually be like that. But yeah, it's a bit of a creative conundrum, really.
Mm. I'm going to go for a different creative conundrum now. This is a great segue. Is this all right? I've done a quiz.
I love a quiz.
Yeah, this is called Cake or Fake. I've got seven things, and they're either a cake or they're not a cake, and it's up to you to guess whether they're cakes or fakes. Are you up for this?
I'm up for this. Have we got ones in like foreign languages and?
Well, let's see. Let's see.
Let's see. I haven't. I don't know this quiz, by the way.
Marion doesn't know this either, so you can both play it.
We can both play. Earlier, okay.
And I'm still alive. So, first one. Forgive the pronunciation. Gâteau mille crêpes. Gâteau mille crêpes. Cake or fake?
In my head, I'm seeing that cake where it's like lots of crepes, like layered up, and you do sometimes have it for wedding cakes. So I'm thinking it's a cake.
Marion?
I think it's a cake.
It is a cake. Congratulations. Oh, thousand crepe cake is a classic French dessert consisting of crepes stacked on top of each other and layered with, most typically, a thin coating of either icing, sugar or pastry cream, while the top of the cake is covered in a thin layer of caramelized sugar. These are very long descriptions here. You have to bear with me. This dense and creamy cake can be prepared with all kinds of different fillings and enjoyed with various fruits, whipped cream or even ice cream. Very good. Nice. Okay. Next one. Ekin Su.
She's on Love Island. I've not been watching it this year, but when I have, that's the one thing that's been making me laugh. Sorry to her out there, but it's not. I don't think it's a cake. I'd love to think it is. I'd love Island to think it is, but I don't think it's a cake. I could
pronounce her surname. No, Ekin Su, born 21st of August 1994, English actress, singer, model and television personality. Yep, she's on Love Island. Just love that name. Sorry, it does sound like
No, it does. It just makes me chuckle.
Because I haven't watched Love Island, when he did say that to me before, and I thought, I don't know who that is. I don't know what that is. I was just like, oh, I don't know. Thinking it was something like a, you know, I don't know, a dance move. But anyway.
It's fair to say this competition is not the toughest competition you've been on.
I don't know. We're only on to question two.
Next one. Porto Calopita. Porto Calopita.
Oh. That's
dreadfully pronounced. Porto Calopita.
I'm going to say fake.
I think that's a fake as well.
This traditional Greek dessert consists of layers of torn phyllo sheets that are blended with a creamy orange flavoured yogurt custard.
But that's a dessert, not a cake. Are we going to get...
but I got, like,
no, but we had crepes for question one.
It says it's a cake doused in a thick sugary orange spiked syrup. Shout out to Theo, our producer.
Theo will know.
Shout out. Him.
Okay, next one, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong as well. A mi vanille. Mi vanille.
I like it. I mean, Ekin Su and mi vanille need to meet, for one.
Is it a cake? Or is it a fake?
Mi vanille. Fake.
I think it's a fake.
Correct. It's actually pronounced Milli Vanilli, the German-French R&B duo from Munich. Formed in 1988, consisting of Fab Morvan and Rob Pilatus. Girl, you know it's true.
Wasn't Milli Vanilli the person who actually was... No, I'm thinking of Vanilla.
There was something about that. The boys that did the dancing wasn't them and stuff singing didn't sing on the vocals, no. But they were...
Me, Vanille. I'd like Vanille. A dozen Me, Vanille, please.
Me, Vanille's.
Me, Vanille's.
You know it's true.
I do. Yeah,
me. Okay, next one. Tompous, cake or fake? Tompous.
I want it to be a cake.
I don't know. I think it's not.
Tompous is a traditional Dutch pastry consisting of a thin puff pastry that is filled with cream and topped with a layer of smooth pink icing. And it's believed it's named after a performing dwarf with a stage name of Tompous.
Oh,
Tompous and Ekin Su. And what was the other one?
Me Vanille.
They're the next children's book.
That was Cake or Fake, and I think the outcome is we're all winners.
We yes. are.
Love a quiz.
Well, do you know what? It was a beautiful quiz, Jamie. A beautiful quiz.
Yeah.
What
was your word? Good research. Yeah.
He does some very good quizzes. Now, moving on from the quiz, which was beautiful.
As if we could.
We will return to it. Ekinsu.
Ekinsu. And I'll have a slice of Ekinsu with my tea, please. Thank you very much.
I'll have a slice of Ekinsu.
With your side order of me vanille. The baking playlist. Now, this is just another little slice of genius, isn't it? This is now blending music and baking. So you go in and you meet these sort of like musos and you say to them, what's your favourite biscuit? What's your favourite cake? Like that. And then you go around to see them and they talk to you about their musical life and you make them a cake.
Make them a cake. This has been a passion project of mine and my friend Dave. So Dave used to do all the like the videos of like my marzipan bees and all sorts of stuff. And we'd always have music on, like me and Dave are both big sort of like music fans. And then we would inevitably have to use royalty-free music to go over the top. And we're like, oh, wouldn't it be so much better if we could have used, you know, a bit of Bowie going on in the background? But obviously that's not allowed. And I just naturally like asking people, A, what their favourite biscuit is, what their favourite cake is. And I was always a big fan of Joe Wiley. Joe Wiley often used to see me through all the many weeks before Bake Off, on Bake Off. I'd be like baking into the night. And her show, I remember thinking, no, Joe, don't go. I've still got another 3 hours of baking bread. And I remember Joe had the lovely artist Ray Morris on, and she was going to be on with Bombay Bicycle Club. And I remember then in my head going, oh, I could make them a giant club biscuit and make a sweet Bombay mix. And the sweet Bombay mix is in the book. So I remember just tweeting in, this was when I was far more sort of active on Twitter, tweeting in to Joe and Ray, and they were like, oh my gosh. But I don't think they actually believed I was going to be turning up with a giant club biscuit. And I remember asking Ray, I was like, do Bombay Bicycle Club, what flavour do they prefer? Orange, mint? And again, I think they were like, I don't know if she's actually going to come in with this. So that's how I then sort of struck up a friendship with Joe, Ray and Bombay Bicycle Club. And then I just was bringing bakes in for different musicians that Joe would have in on the show. And then baking playlists is sort of just a natural sort of evolution of that. And what's great is that it's good going to the house, because then also, you know, everyone's just so interested in where their particular favourite artist lives, what's in their fridge. And it, again, rather than, we initially had the idea, and we did actually shoot a pilot with Ray that we're going to be airing soon, where it was more like a music studio. Because again, rather than it, you know, most cook shows, you're in a kitchen. And a bit like my approach to like, I'd want almost a design cook show to be in a design studio rather than a kitchen. So it was like a music studio, and we had the flight cases that had like the hobs on and everything else. But it is quite nice going to the different artists' house. So yeah, I turn up. I've already got from them. I ask them like, do you have any favourite biscuits, any flavours, chocolates, anything you don't like? And then I try and inspire it by one of their sort of recent tracks or one in their back catalogue. And then it's the idea that they bake it alongside me. So again, they're able to see that actually it's very possible to make a pineapple flour or a Ritz cracker brownie. And then we discover sort of information about them that maybe the enemy hasn't got, like what the UK number one was when they were born, what the first gig they went to, what the first single they owned. And then that information is curated into a baking playlist, which then goes on Spotify. So by the end of the episode, you've got like the 15-minute YouTube thing of us making said bake. You can then go back and listen to the playlist, and then I draw up an illustrated recipe for each artist's bake. But yeah, it's an eclectic playlist you get at the end of the day, and they're just really happy to sort of have a bespoke bake made for them.
Oh my God, and who wouldn't be? My goodness me, I love it. I've watched a few and I just think they're so great.
I think it's a really good idea, because it's that thing of you're taking them out of their headspace, because they're like in a comfortable space, but it's not their comfort space. And so you just get a different interview from the get-go, right?
That's the thing. It was sort of almost like we were saying Desert Island Disc sort of like merged with like TFI Friday or Table Manners podcast. So trying to keep it sort of quite informal, as well as obviously wanting to learn about the artist. If people at home are just actually wanting to know about how to make a Ritz brownie, but they're also discovering what Jack Garrett's like, or, you know.
How many, was there like 8 episodes in the first season?
So we've got 7 episodes in the first one, and then we've also done the Baking Playlist podcast, where that's been with an artist that's overseas, so we haven't been able to film with them. And that's been quite interesting because the last two have been over in the States. So it's almost finding out as well what food they miss from the UK and then what food they like to have on tour and any particular snacks, say, in America that we couldn't have here. So again, it sort of works on the same format where I'm chatting to them and then we've got a baking playlist going by the answers they've given. And then when they're next over in this country, we will then create the bake that I come up with then.
I think it's such a smart, it's another good fit, you know, because the thing with you is you have like baking as your core and then you bolt on these left field ideas to it. And I think that's just another one, you know, it's just a great mashup in a way that you wouldn't expect. But that to me, you know, a bit like Hot Ones, you know, interviewing people while they're eating hot chicken wings. It's just an interview with an added thing. And yours has just got a really nice twist there. It's a really smart move.
I think it's that thing that we're not just one label, you know, people, oh, Bake Off, and they don't realise about the design or anything else. So it's just nice sort of showing that we're sort of made up of many different interests.
I'm exhausted by all this creativity. I feel like this is a bleeding edge. I hope that people aren't listening to this and like driving because they'll have driven off the road by being at the forefront of it all.
If they're listening to this falling asleep, can you imagine the dreams?
I'm so excited now. I'm going to have to go for a little run. Can't help it. Well, listen, you're our first like proper baking guest as well.
Oh, that is an honour.
I don't think anybody else could really compare now, really.
I have loved it. You've inspired me to create many more bakes and biscuits, so thank you for that.
Thanks, Francis.
Oh, Francis, can you be my best friend now, please?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for joining us for another captivating episode of The Lovecraft Show.
I was certainly captivated. In fact, I'm still underneath the net right now.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can send us an email to show@lovecrafts.com and subscribe to us on your favourite podcasting platform.
And if you've got time to spare, it would be marvellous if you could leave a review for us so that everybody knows how much you like us. If you're, I don't know, waiting for the fire brigade to get your cat out of a tree, hop online, leave us a review, get over and done with. Thanks, everybody. Bye.